non-punishment and non-prosecution principle, I think it's really complicated. But I hope to hear from you afterwards what you think about it and if you ever dealt with it. Are there some people who have ever dealt in a case they handled with the non-prosecution or non-punishment principle? Please raise your hand if so. Nobody has. Okay. That makes it complicated. Okay. And we come to see on some more topics as well, the cooperation between authorities to identify victims of trafficking, and also some aspects on the cost of victims' assistance. I hope to give another view on it as was being presented this morning. So, actually, the two themes come together because we think authorities can play a very important role in identifying victims of THB. And when they pass signals of trafficking to a judge or a public prosecutor, they have a role in filling in the principles of non-prosecution and non-punishment. And I think that's somewhat underestimated how other authorities, NGOs, governmental organizations can play a role. And we have a national rapporteur on human trafficking. She's completely independent. She just resigned 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. And we will have a new one next February. But in her last report, she said that, and it was the 10th report of her, she said that 50% of all the medical experts had a victim of trafficking as a client. But then they were being asked, do you know what to do? Do you know where to turn to? Who you should address? And they, about 70 to 80% or even higher, didn't have a clue where to turn to. So this is something the medical sector, medical experts like doctors, general practitioners, but also in hospitals, can have a very important role in reporting these types of crime. But that's also the same for the city council, and sometimes they don't have a clue as well. Yeah, and non-prosecution and non-punishment, and using the non-punishment principle is not easy, like I already said. The main challenge is, and I would say, to articulate a model that balances the interests of justice with protection of victims of trafficking. And this model needs to be expressed in no uncertain terms so that it sends a clear message to victims that they can exit the trafficking situation without having to be fearful of interaction and further traumatization by the authorities. So that's one side. They don't have to be afraid to report, even if they have committed crimes. But on the other end, the model cannot provide blanket immunity, especially if serious offences have been committed. So if you force somebody, say, to drug trafficking, or even worse, if you force somebody to commit a murder, you're dealing as well with the perpetrator as a victim. But you can't say, because you're a victim, no punishment will follow, no prosecution will follow. I think that's one step too far. And that's all what the non-prosecution and the non-punishment principle is about. And of course, the starting point is the prosecution. And if it's clear for us that victims are forced to commit criminal offences, we can decide, at least in the Netherlands, not to prosecute, and sometimes some formal requirements have to be met. But it's also very good to keep a clear eye on that the non-punishment principle is an international principle. It's because of the protection of victims of exploitation. If the person on the basis of a national act or on the basis of an international provision can be appointed as a victim, the victim can refer to the non-punishment principle, and the offences must sufficiently directly related to the exploitation. I will come back on this last point as well. And what's the reason? Yeah, it's of course to avoid further victimization, the risk of course being deported if you have illegally entered into the country, or the risk of being detained or prosecuted, detection of the original offence, and to protect the human rights of victims. That's actually the reason behind we have this non-punishment principle. And the legal basis is within three treaties, the Warsaw Convention, EU Directive, of course, and the Forced Labour Convention in 2014. But the question I would like to raise, where do we have to look at? What types of crime? In these conventions, in the directive, in the protocol, there are no limitations to the type of crime. So a victim can commit any type of crime and call in the non-punishment or non-prosecution principle. But actually you can, in this field, distinguish three types of crime that can be committed by the victim. And the first one are the purpose offences. This criminal, for instance, criminal exploitation, and the purpose of the perpetrator is in direct relation with the crime. For instance, it was an example that was being mentioned this morning already, forcing people, children, to pickpocket, forcing people to cut hemp in wheat plantations. That's a criminal act, but if you force people to do so, yeah, it's a really purpose offence. So the offending occurs as a direct consequence of the victim's situation of trafficking. So there's a direct relationship between the offence the victim is committing and the trafficking. That's the first type. The second type are the so-called status offences. Offences related with the status of the victim to stay in the country where he, she will be a victim or is already a victim. And the trafficker's purpose is not directly related to the status. For instance, the victim uses a forged password. It's not directly related to the type of trafficking she is facing. And the forced password gives the victim the opportunity to stay in the other country while she is being exploited, or he is being exploited. So-called status offences, that is the second type of crime that can be committed by victims. And the third type of crime the victim can commit are so-called secondary offences. Offences seemingly detached from the original trafficking situation. The criminal act is detached from the trafficking situation, but in the time frame they come together. It's sometimes a bit difficult to realize what I'm aiming at. I will give an example. For example, the victim is locked up, and the victim is destroying the door of the room in which she is being locked up. So it's actually not part of the trafficking crime, it's not part of a status offence, but it's something that is related in a more remote way from the whole trafficking scene. So it's a group of offences where a temporal and causal link between trafficking and an offence need to be most evident for the application of the principle. So there should be some kind of relationship about destroying the door and the trafficking situation. And when somebody is being locked up, I think that's quite easy. So three types of crime: purpose offences, status offences, secondary offences. And then the next step we have to make when we dealing with the non-prosecution and non-punishment principle is the relationship between the trafficking and the criminal act. And I would say the first treaty, the Warsaw Convention, is making a difference between the EU Directive and the Labour Convention. There are some differences. And when we stick to the Warsaw Treaty, victims should not be punished if they are forced to commit illegal activities. And this is the juris model, being forced juris model. But in the EU Directive and the Labour Convention, and you can see it, it says in the last words, direct consequence of being subjected, direct consequence of being subjected. And that is, I think, something different, because you can speak of the so-called causation model. There should be a link, a tie between the trafficking situation and the crime committed by the victim. And both treaties state that this has to be a forced link, so that's something that comes with it. It has to be a forced link, of course. So we have the juris model and the causation model. And I think causation model can be seen as giving a wider perspective to call in this principle. So what I'm saying, you have to have this typical crime can be described in three forms, and you have to have a relationship between the trafficking act and the criminal act committed by the victim. Well, that makes it quite complicated, I think. It was already mentioned this morning as well, of course, that victims should be protected, and that's why we have this principle. And states must adopt an effective policy against combating trafficking. They have to take preventive measures and protection and assistance of victims. And it's easily being written down, but in practice it can be sometimes quite complicated. When it comes to the non-punishment and non-prosecution principle in the Netherlands, we have some ways. We have a special directive not to prosecute, and that's a decision, and that can be different in some other legislations, but in the Netherlands we have the opportunity not to prosecute, and then we can say we have a case of self-defense, force majeure, etc., then we can decide not to prosecute. And that's the other type of crime which we're not prosecuting, even if the formal requirements are being met. It's an edge case, and prosecution would be disproportionate. And the other options are up to the judge. A judge can say, okay, you've been found guilty to the crime, but no punishment. Or a judge can consider a circumstance beyond one's control, and also say when somebody commits a murder and he's being forced to, or he smuggled drugs or something and he's being forced to, then the judge can take into account the non-punishment principle and reduce the sentence, get to a lower sentence. That are the possibilities in Netherlands law, but in other states you have the same provisions: Argentina, United States, and the Philippines. And we have of non-prosecution is also in the UN resolution, and in the Netherlands, like I already said, we have the principle of opportunity, and we are not obliged to prosecute, but that can be different in other legislations. So the starting point with using this principle is always with the prosecutor, but later on the judge can come in account as well. So we see some obstacles. Perpetrators use minors because minors cannot be penalized, for instance, under 12 years. We've seen cases where, say, grandparents let the grandchildren steal from a supermarket, and the grandchild was 10 years old, so he knows that the child can't be punished or even not even being prosecuted. And in some legislations, it's up to not to up to the prosecution to the prosecutor to say something about this principle. Okay, now I get to the next topic, is the effective cooperation between authorities in assisting and protecting victims. Five things I'd like to mention. Of course, and it was already mentioned by our Spanish colleague, the directive, the EU directive, is really important. And in the Netherlands, it's being introduced in the in a directive to the public prosecuting service that the public prosecutor has to inform victims of all important decisions made in criminal proceedings. That's an obligation. Right of the victims to have a solicitor, or a lawyer, and an interpreter, especially in trafficking cases. So they can, then we have specialized lawyers on these teams, and they come with the victim to court proceedings. The right of the victims to examine the content of the procedural documents, so they can have a look in advance in the documents. And they can receive support of the prosecutor's office asking for compensation during court proceedings. And sometimes compensation can be quite high. The highest compensation was some years ago given to a Bulgarian victim. It was nearly €1 million. But a couple of weeks ago, the Amsterdam court ruled that the victim from Hungary should get 175,000 euros. And in our new law, it's the state that pays the victim, and the state goes after the person being forced to pay to get the money back. So the victim herself or himself doesn't have to go after the money, receiving the money from the state, and the state is trying to get the money back. So it gets a lot of burden from the shoulders of the victim. And also information about the conditional release of the suspect and the convict. And this is for all types of crime, but also for human trafficking cases. First contact, we have a directive on this as well. Victims receive information about criminal procedures and the investigative authorities. Victims are informed about victim support services, and a transcript is made of this conversation. So this is the first step, first contact. And this can go on further, and an intake can take place, and with this type of serious crime, directive states that auditive and audiovisual and audio registration of interrogation should take place, and it's also the competent authorities, and that's of course the prosecutor, can start an investigation without the decision of the victim whether to proceed, yes or no. And that's sometimes also different, because this morning we saw, for example, in Spain, that the judges always want to see the victim in court. It happens a lot in the Netherlands as well, but it is not absolutely necessary. It's not absolutely necessary for a victim or witness to appear in court. And there can be a verdict without using the victim statement. Sometimes the judge is always free to choose, and instead of making use of the statement made, say, in court or by an interrogating judge, you can use the victim statement made at the police. So that makes sometimes life much easier. We have seen cases where the first day at the police station, the victim makes a very clear statement, and then after a couple of months under pressure of the perpetrator or the trafficker, they're making another statement and saying, oh no, I made the wrong statement at the police station, and I was in love, and he was such a nice guy, and I was actually only angry with him. And yeah, that's what we heard this morning with the sex, being beaten up, but it's all part of the sex game. Yeah, and you know, of course you know it's not true. So the judge can choose what statement he uses. And I think that's a big advantage in these difficult type of cases. Of course, we do have a special victim protection. We have a directive on that for foreigners, but also for children. Yeah, we take that in account. And right at the moment, we're having a big case, and I will elaborate a bit more on that tomorrow. It's called the 13 Oceans case, where minors coming from former Yugoslavia are being forced on Amsterdam train station to pickpocket and to commit petty crimes. And they can be seen both as victims and perpetrators, and how should you deal with them? It's quite a challenging case, but on the other hand, very rewarding if you have take the long-term aspects in this case. First the victims, the children say, yeah, I want to go away as soon as possible from the Netherlands. But if you're able to keep them a bit longer under your custody, they finally want to make changes in their lives. And that's actually what should happen, because 13, 14 year olds shouldn't be out on the platforms at the Amsterdam Central train station stealing and pickpocketing, but they should be at school receiving a good education. But it takes a really long time perspective. So what do we do? Also in this 13 Oceans case with the minors, we involve a lot of organizations that can do something against trafficking. And Comensha has a commission against human trafficking, Fair Work, especially looking at victims of labor exploitation, police, of course, inspection of the social inspectorate, Fear, I will come to that later on, but also the ministry, of course, the Royal Marshals say they are competent for the border controls, etc., etc. So, and they all can pick up signs of human trafficking. And this morning, the question was already being raised: how does the policeman out on the street knows what the signs of human trafficking are? And this year we got 2 million euros from our ministry also to train every, and we've got about 60,000 policemen, but they will get all a 4-hour training on human trafficking. It will take some time, but everybody in the Dutch police force will be trained, getting a first, say, very basic, of course, training about picking up signals of human trafficking. And I think that's really good thing that's going to happen now. Now we, Farin asked me to say something about the cost of victims' assistance. I thought it was quite difficult to say something, very bright about this. But there's a study on economic analysis of survivors and use of psychiatric services. 119 patients were included in this analysis. Mean total meant health service costs per patient were 27,000 British pounds, and mean duration of the contact with the services was about 1,490 days. So in total, it meant that patients would cost about 32,000 pounds, and that's approximately on an average, and it's about 57 pounds per day per patient. So that gives a kind of clue what a patient or a victim of human trafficking costs. So the mean cost per patient per day is approximately 57 British pounds. But this is a specific situation, of course. I also found a study from the Austin University in Texas, and they had a closer look at the victims of human trafficking, and especially labor trafficking. And they say minor and youth and sex trafficking cost the Texas states about $6.6 billion. So that's a lot of money. And the life, this is for the lifetime costs, and they say it's about child abuse and maltreatment, homeless, etc. So it's the estimated costs of minor and youth sex trafficking. And also about the annual value for labor exploiters from trafficking victims. They estimated also a lot of money, nearly this 6 billion. I also asked one of the shelters in the Netherlands, and they specialized in giving shelter to victims of human trafficking. And it's called Vier Friesland. It's in the northern part of the Netherlands. They're really doing a very good job. And they say a 24-hour support and treatment costs them about 260,000 euro. And for one patient, it's about 100,000 euros every year. And yeah, if there is special treatment needed, it's about 10,000 to 15,000 euro more expensive. It's wrongly written there. But so you can see, when you have to pay for shelter, it's quite costly. So I've come to the end of my presentation, and I hope to see your questions afterward. Thank you very much.